Okay, welcome. We will call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And if you would join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. All right, the first item is consent agenda. If there's any questions or comments or motion?
If there's nothing, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries, which leads us to the swearing in of the newly elected officials, Brianna Boobin Vanderhaar and Greg McPherson. And I guess my name should be on there also.
Shouldn't it say newly reelected officials?
Otherwise, I'm going home with pay. I guess we can just do this all at once, right? You want us just to come forward and
speech.
Jeez, Troy.
Speech. That's Greg. Okay. All right.
Pictures. Well, we didn't sign up for pictures. I was going to mine.
So raise your hand and repeat after me. I, Joe Steer.
I, Joe Steer.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Idaho.
The Constitution of the State of Idaho.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties of mayor of the City of CUNA.
I will faithfully discharge the duties of mayor of the City of CUNA.
According to the best of my ability. If you will sign here, please. Thank you, sir.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Hi, Brianna Boobin Vanderhaar.
I'm Brianna.
Do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of Idaho, and that I will faithfully discharge the duties of the Councilor of the City of CUNA according to the best of my ability. Thank you.
The messing
one. Okay. Hey, hi, Greg McPherson.
Hi, Greg McPherson.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
Do solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
That I will support the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Idaho.
And the Constitution of the State of Idaho.
And that I will faithfully discharge the duties of Counselor of the City of CUNA.
That I will faithfully discharge the duties of Counselor of the City of CUNA.
According to the best of my ability.
According to the best of my ability. Mm-hmm.
Flawless.
Yay. All right, so as a matter of process, we need to reconvene the council meeting. And so when Chris is ready, we will have her call roll again.
Councilmember Cardoza?
Here.
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Council President Ruben Vanderhaar?
Here.
Councilmember McPherson?
Still here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. Next is to elect a council president. So whenever we do have a, each year we elect a new council president or reaffirm the old council president. So do we have any nominations?
I nominate Brianna Boobin Vanderhaar.
Well, thank you. I'd be happy to serve again if that is our desire.
Second.
Okay. Is there any other nominations? Okay. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor of Brianna Boobin Vanderhaar remaining as council president, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And that motion carries. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And we have a second consent agenda. So is there any other comments or anything on that one?
If nothing, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Ruben Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. So community reports or request, is Phil Roberts here? Yeah, let's, have you heard from him?
He anticipated being here, but he must be late. His request just reflected what is in the packet. The essence of it is that to be able to review without having to go through the county would move timelines along quicker as far as turnarounds.
Okay.
Do you want
to? Yeah. Yeah, Bill, would you like to comment on this one?
Mayor and members of council, Bill Gigray, city attorney, 5700 East Franklin Road, Nampa, Idaho. I also serve as counsel for the Board of Commissioners of the CUNY Rural Fire Protection District, so I should announce that as I proceed here. So you may want to take what I say with a grain of salt, but I do am familiar with this particular item that's before you. The state fire marshal's office is, in pursuant to their regulations, reviews and does plan reviews on sprinkler installations in various construction. It's my understanding, based on the information provided by the chief, that this causes a considerable delay because of the capacities of the state fire marshal's office to move through and approve those plans in a timely manner, considering the amount of volume which is being received here in the city of CUNA. And so there's a procedure under the rules and regulations of the State Department of Insurance, which the state fire marshals is under, where we can seek an exemption from the state doing those plan reviews and allow those plan reviews to be done by the local fire district. And so I believe what you have in front of you is a request that the city, and under the rules of the state fire marshal's office, the Department of Insurance, there has to be a request by the jurisdictions within which those those applications and for those installations are made, which for the Kuna Rural Fire District would include the city of Kuna and Ada County. So a similar request is being submitted to the commissioners of Ada County as well. But in essence, what this is if the exemption is granted, and it'll be up to the state fire marshal's office to grant it, we would be able to do all of those inspections here locally without having to refer them to their office for review. Now, this will be reviewed by the state fire marshal's office. They have to determine that there is sufficient grounds to grant the exemption. I have helped the chief in drafting that request. It's really clear in my mind legally if there isn't a request by the city for those permits within the bounds of the city and the county within the bounds of the county, there is no basis for the state fire marshal to grant the exemption. So it seems kind of odd, but I think there's, in a way, they ignore that fire districts exist in the state fire marshal's policies, the ADAPA policies that apply. Okay. So I would stand for whatever questions you might ask. Whether or not I could answer them all, I don't know, but I am familiar with this procedure.
So it doesn't exempt them from anything from the
International Fire Code
or any of that. So basically all we're doing is requesting that the state fire marshal's office allow this to happen with our blessing. Is that
correct? It eliminates that double plan review, and what the concern is that those plans can sit there on a desk until they get, because they would be doing them, the state fire marshal's office, for everybody all over the state, mm-hmm. which with the amount of growth that we're seeing in the state can amount to a considerable amount of activity. But the applications of the International Fire Code, we have to enforce the by law. So that doesn't change.
Okay.
Good question.
Bob, since this is something that has to do with building code and that type of thing, is there any comment that or questions that you would have on the...
Mayor and Council, after reviewing that in the packet, I think the building department would be very supportive of that change. I think it would be much more cohesive from the inspection standpoint with the two departments, so we'd be supportive of it.
Okay. Good. Council, have any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Bill, thank you very much. So whatever is the pleasure of the council?
Do you have any further discussion on it?
Pretty sure. I wonder, are we accepting any liability by endorsing this if something should happen as far as any kind of litigation that the city would be accepting by endorsement?
Bill?
Again, for the record, Bill Gigray, I'm trying to get better about that. I'll answer this with both my hats on. And Councilman Cardozo, no. The final decision on this is the state fire marshal. They determine whether there's a basis to grant the exemption or not. It's just the way the IDAPA rules read, the request has to come from the jurisdiction within which the permits are granted. And since building permits, and it makes sense to me, because building permits are always granted by the building official of a city and the building official of a county. So to have the fire marshal or to have the fire chief ask for, or the district for the exception without the blessing and the request of the government entity who has a building official that issues a building permit, would seem like leaving somebody out. So I think the whole process makes sense. But okay. The decision won't be yours. It'll be the state fire marshal.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And I see that Chief Roberts is here now. I don't know if there's anything you want to add, or I guess you don't know what's been said, but you can just make something up if you want.
Yeah, I can read his mind. No. I don't know if I want to, but anyway, the benefit for the community for this is a turnaround of permits and the plan review. If we have control with that, we can work with the building department and make sure we're doing that in a timely manner. The concern for allowing the state to do it, they're very qualified, but they're doing it for a number of jurisdictions, and their turnaround time is like 3 weeks or greater. And so what we're trying to maintain is less than a week to do that. So we're working on those capabilities within our own means that we can control, and I think that this allows us to provide a better service to CUNA and the fire protection district that we serve. And so that's the whole intent of it. It's not to take anything away from the state fire marshal's office. It's just that we want to independently serve our community and the district the way that we feel best. And we think that we can do that with the speed of building and construction nowadays. And we like to build those relationships with our builders and developers. So they know, we know what they're doing, we know what the future holds, and so that's real, the whole reason for this to move forward. So,
very good. Anybody have any questions for Chief? Okay, thank you very much.
Sorry for my lateness.
Oh, here I am.
No worries. Sorry, get to the right page. Okay, then I move we approve the request for exemption for fire sprinkler plan review from Idaho State Fire Marshal's office that was submitted by the CUNA Rural Fire District.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to accept that exemption for the fire sprinkler plan review. Could I get you also to add in there that to authorize Mayor to sign that, since that's the way it's written here?
Sure. Amend my motion to reflect that we are also approving the mayor's signature on that exemption request.
Second stands.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Thank you very much. Next, we go to our public hearing, continued from November 19, 2019, regular city council meeting for testimony from staff and public written testimony in consideration to approve ordinance number 2019-44. Wendy Howe, Planning and Zoning Director, Bobby Withrow, Parks Director. I believe we had Jason, Bobby, that we're going to take the lead on this one, so I don't know, whichever one wants to begin on that would be good.
All right. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. For the record, Jace Hellman, 751 West 4th Street. The open space section of the ordinance that's before you this evening is a result of the direction that we received from council, as well as discussion in the public hearing and testimony as well. And you're able to see that on the screen. The larger table is obviously our previously proposed one, and then the shorter, more compact table is what we've modified that to based off our research on infill projects, historical sizes of projects, consecutive parcels with the same land ownership, really just trying to look at what kind of projects we'll see that won't exist inside of a PUD that will allow us to then apply more open space to those projects. Really, we kind of want to just more kind of get your guys' questions for us. There is a plethora of late exhibits that we've received in the last hour of the business day that are in front of you this evening, so completely understandable if you need time to read through those. Other than that, I will stand for any questions you guys may have. And if it's too hard to see, I do have paper copies of what's up on the screen if you would like those.
That's not in our packet, right?
No, it's just, it is, but it's the ordinance is just pulled out, cut out.
Could I have a paper copy?
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And so, again, this was kind of to help bring our ordinance into line with our rewrite of our comprehensive plan. I think we did discover there was some error in at least the final part of the last proposal and draft, mostly at the end. I don't believe there's too many properties that would ever match that large 2001 plus unit number. So although that would, if that did ever happen, cause some problems. But obviously they have gone away from that original set of numbers. And I know that Meridian is working on changing theirs. I think they're at 10%, and their feeling was that that was not enough. I don't know where they're at with that process right now. I think they're in process of redoing their open space requirement. This one does include for land donation to school district. Is that correct? Also, would you want to go over that a little bit?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor and council members. For the record, Jace Hellman, Keenan Planning Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street. This table includes a note that does allow for any parcel of land that's donated to the school district, 10-acre school site, and beyond, to count towards a project's open space. So if a project does come in with a school site, which is an amenity for that development, and obviously the community as well, that school site would count towards the open space requirement, and therefore helping the school district, giving the developer something to stand on, saying we have a school on our project, and then helping the community overall that way.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I understand a different consideration correctly. If the developers don't put the appropriate amenities in the open space that they're required to include, in theory, they would still need to pay park impact fees on top of this open space requirement. Is that correct?
Yes. So the open space is basically for the subdivisions that are coming in that don't have a lot of park space, so for kids to go and play. So the park impact fee comes into play, that is assessed to every buildable lot. If a developer comes in and says, "Hey, we meet your minimum requirements, and we want to give this to the city," then yes, we will give them credits for that, but they have to meet our minimum requirements. And for instance, so the land size would be 5 acres or more. Now we do have requirements for playground, bathroom, and stuff like that that are supposed to go into it. So if that were to come forward, then yeah, they would get a credit for it.
Okay.
And then, so another thing that was mentioned the last time was that there was concern for HOA fees on properties that got large. As I recall, the Parks Department requires a 5-acre parcel to be donated to the city as a park, and then that would relieve the HOAs from having to maintain those properties and take care of them. Is that correct?
Yes. For the record, Bobby Withrow, Parks Director, 751 West 4th Street. Yes, Mayor, sir, that is correct.
Okay.
And kind of to add to that, the other cities around us require the same thing. Meridian does have open space and park impact fee requirements, and we've been compared to Eagle a lot, and they also have the same requirements, but they also include a pathway impact fee that's paid. So we're not the only ones doing this.
And apologies if I missed it in the packet. I think the packet this time was only 600 pages. Are there the, do we have anywhere in the packet, and if not, can we obtain the open space requirements for surrounding cities in the Treasure Valley? Like, I've heard in conversation that Meridian's is 10%, but it sounded like we're not sure if that's still it or not.
Council President Boobin Vandahar. So the city of Eagle, we don't have them in the packet, so you didn't miss them there. But the city of Eagle, for sure, they are at 15% required open space.
And are these just straight across the board?
They're straight across the boards. There are a couple little caveats that in their code. But as far as most of their standard development, 18% open space, 15% is required to be usable. But their definition of usable is different than ours, where they do include a portion of their buffers, their end caps, and things like that. So they do require a higher amount, but they also accept more as their open space. Meridian is 10%. However, they are now in the process of changing their code. So I don't know what their new standard will look like.
Do you know what they're proposing?
That I do not.
Okay. Do we know any of the other Boise, Garden City? I mean, I know some Garden City's, I guess, a closer. We don't have to consider Boise.
Yeah. The two main that we get compared to a lot is Meridian and Eagle, and those are the two that we focused on that are in our, I guess, friendship that we can compare it to a lot. So those are the two that we focused on. We haven't looked at Boise, or we've looked at Boise, but I couldn't tell you what the number is.
Okay. I guess I will clarify by the end of this part of the agenda, but I might be interested in obtaining numbers for like Garden City and Star at least. Maybe also, I mean, Nampa's way bigger than us, but just as a comparator, you know.
Okay. Deep in thought, Richard.
Trying to stay awake, I'm sorry.
Are we ready for the public hearing then, or?
Well, I just wanted to kind of make sure we were getting this.
Jump over anybody?
All right, so what we had done then was we had requested for written testimony and then testimony from staff, so unless you're wanting to open something up again.
I just didn't know if we were, like we had a public hearing.
This is a different one.
A different one? Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I have at least one more question for staff, which is, let us assume for the sake of argument that every development that goes in would be between 7 and 50 and therefore at the 7% open space. Would that achieve the 1 acre per 80 people standard that we are hoping to achieve?
Council President Boobin Vandahar, council members, Mr. Mayor, we believe it will get us to the 1 to 80. I want to reiterate, the goal of this code is not to get every project at 1 to 80 or even get the city to 1 to 80 overnight. The goal is to start getting people to pay attention to open space, put open space in their projects so they have some sort of amenity to sell to people so our community members have places to go and hang out. We have one of the youngest populations in the entire valley, in the state of Idaho. We need places for these people to go. Open space, whether we get there overnight or it takes us 10 years, this code's going to help us march towards that. And that's one of the key differences is our 1 to 80 isn't just all public parks or private parks. It's a combination of every open space that we have in the city. So it might take a while, but this code, yes, will get us moving in that direction.
Can you talk to me a little bit about why, it would be beneficial or not to go with a system as we're proposing, which allocates the percentage of required open space based on the number of dwelling units versus the density of the project. So there's, you know, the argument that if you have like an R3, I know that's not a thing, but like an R3, R4 subdivision, right? The lots are like a third of an acre. The argument would be they don't need a park also. They already have plenty of space to run around on their own lots. Whether that's true or not, I can see the logic behind the argument, right? That that subdivision might need less open space than an apartment complex where nobody has their own yard, and therefore you would need more shared space. So can you talk to me a little bit about why we landed on this approach versus one that's more tied to the density of the project?
Council President Ruben von der Haar, Council Members, Mr. Mayor, for the record, Jace Hellman, Kingdom Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street. What we looked at, the approach versus any other kind of approach, is a tiered system based on your impact. The amount of dwelling units, let's take Compass's specific number for CUNA per dwelling, is 3.07. Times that by the amount of units, that's the number of people that are expected to move into that project. So the higher that your dwelling units have, the more or open space you should be responsible for to put, which actually naturally, in my opinion, takes those R2s that, let's say you have 10 acres in R2, that's 20 units as a max. Well, 20 units is only 7%. 7% of 10 acres really isn't that much at all, but that's based off your impact that you have. So now let's take the same 130 acres and you have an R6. Not very great at math, but let's see.
We just go with 10 acres.
Yeah,
let's, R6. 60 versus the
60 20 versus the 20. You're putting more impact on that 10 acres. You're putting more people on that 10 acres. And that 10 acres of that R6, you should be required to put more. And I feel like that's what this table does versus a just flat across 10%, which then we are harming the infill projects, the smaller projects that may not need the larger amounts of open space. This way, we're tiered because it's going to be based off what your impact is. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. I'm satisfied with that response for the moment. Do anybody else have questions?
No, I like your comment, though.
like I said, the thing that I like about what staff is doing here is they're really working hard towards getting us towards that goal that the comprehensive plan requires. It was written by the citizens, and I think they've come a long way. We saw that there was some error in the first one, and we've received a lot of comment from different folks on the fact that they felt that one was too much and not enough in other areas, and so I think they've done a really good job of changing this around to making it something that's more reasonable and creates a better expectation. It gets a 12.5% maximum, which should be shouldn't be too devastating for anyone to have to meet that. I think it does address the number of people in a small area and giving them more space.
So. One procedural question. The new proposal, we'll call it version 2, how long has it been circulating? Like, when did it become public? Was it just when the packet was published on Friday, or were the details included in notices about public hearing coming up? I guess my question stated differently is, how long have people had to digest these new numbers? Is it just a couple of days, or is it longer than that?
Council President Buben van der Haar, Council Members, Mayor Steer, there has the hearing on November 19th was continued to today, so there was no noticing to redo. As far as how long these numbers have been out, there are a few people that have gotten these numbers, take a look at them, just to get some of that extra input. But as far as just the mass of the public, it was when this packet was posted online.
Okay. So reason I'm asking is just because I am I think for something that's this big and that we've gotten so much feedback on, I think there's value in going ahead and doing a third reading. We're already this far into it. I guess the thought process that I'm having is, do we just put it to the next meeting, or do we put it to the first meeting in February just to give as many people as possible the opportunity to look at this and provide any feedback so that we can, you know, hopefully come up with final modifications, if any, and then get it in place. So I don't know if anybody has thoughts about how you, oh, and council does.
Bill, yes.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Bill Gigray, city attorney, I would suggest that the best procedure to follow, since you're continuing the hearing and not re-noticing it, is I think it would be advantageous to those who are in present to be advised of what changes were made from what was originally published and noticed in this, so they are aware of what new considerations you have for passing this ordinance. Then I think you could announce that those changes are available in the city packet at the city, or they'll probably be online so people can see them, and then continue the hearing and have a third reading, so, and give everyone an opportunity to address those changes at a following meeting and hearing. That way, you know, the public is well aware of what changes were made when it was originally noticed. They had the opportunity to appear at these hearings. They have the opportunity to see those changes online, and I think that would make it clear that the original notice doesn't have to be redone, and because you're considering revisions, and you could proceed with this. That would be my recommendation.
Okay.
So are you saying, like, read this into the record aloud, or just make...
Well, I think it's something ought to be clear that the public is aware as they sit here as to what changes are now under consideration by the council from what was originally published when the notice was published in the paper and when the notices went out to the affected property owners.
Okay. So I guess for clarification per council suggestion, I know it's kind of hard to see the tables up there. The table on the left-hand side is the original proposal from the November 19th meeting. It included a minimum required open space of 3% for properties, developments of 100 properties or less. And then included that very long table goes in increments of, it looks like 50 from 101 to 150, and then in 50 lot increments all the way up to 2001 plus is the very last one. And for those, the required open space ranges from 4.7% up to 24% for up to 2000, and then there's a figure for increasing that. So in theory, you could have developments that would require 24% open space. And there was some concern, I think chiefly last time, and please correct me if I'm wrong because I wasn't at the meeting, I'm just reading, I read the minutes. I think one of the primary concerns is that this table created sort of an incentivization to break up what might have been a larger development into smaller parcels in order to kind of try to get around the quite high percentages of required open space. And so the table on the right, which you guys probably have a better chance of reading from this from the audience, is the new January 7th proposal. It exempts developments that are just 1 to 6 units. It still goes up from 51 and above. It still goes in 50 lot increments or unit increments, I guess I should say. But the minimum is now 7% instead of 4.7%, and the maximum is now 12.5% instead of 24%. So considerably less variation, in theory less incentive to break up into smaller lots or smaller developments, I guess. Yeah, and then
the actual change in the packet is listed in the packet. In the actual ordinance, it begins on page 19 of 26 and goes to 20 of 26. And then in the overall packet, it's actually on page 347 and 348, so that it can be viewed. So it can be viewed as to what this is that we're looking at here with the proposed change from the original.
What are folks' thoughts on continuing this until January 21st versus February? Yes, 4th. Thank you.
I think because the focus has always been on the percentage-based increments here, and with them simplifying as much as they are, I don't know if we need a whole month for review and comment.
Yeah.
This might, I mean, it's a lot more simplified than what it was. So we started from scratch and held it off for a month, and then I think 2 weeks is plenty of time if okay. We just want to revisit it.
I'm good either way. What's staff think?
The 20th is MLK Day, just a side note. I don't know if anybody, if like having our next meeting immediately follow a holiday weekend would be any sort of concern that would make us want to kick it further, but just throwing it out there.
Staff is comfortable with the 21st of January.
Okay. Rich, did you have thoughts?
I have no problem.
Okay.
And then I should also note I received an email from the school district that they hadn't had a chance to take it to the board yet, and they won't be able to put their comment in until the 14th of January. So the 21st would actually work for them based on
okay.
The communication I received from Mr. Reinhart from the school district. So that'll give them time to look at it also. And I also invited them to talk to staff if they had any other questions. So,
when we continue this for a third reading, do we want to allow any additional public testimony at that point? I know that was not something that we were including here. Does that make sense as a question?
I think kind of my preference was that we get to work with staff on these things. However, if we want to do written testimony again, I think that worked out pretty well this time. We received quite a few letters.
I guess my one big concern is if we are expecting to, for example, receive feedback from the school district, it would be impossible for people to address that in their written testimony if it's not published until the packet's published. So that would be my only concern is if, yeah, if we're expecting something like that.
Yeah, and I think, I think they were going to just work with staff on anything that they had for comments. So, of course, I guess it would be cleaner if we kind of stay with the way we are here and take the written testimony and have everybody work with staff so that those changes can be made over that period of time so we have something that's a little more cleaned up when it gets back to us. And would be my preference. But.
Okay. I have one modification for printing next time for whoever wants it. Let's see. This will be on page 14 of 26 of the marked up version. So it's page 22 of 95 of this section of the packet. It's in section. So that page starts with section H, abatement of unlawful fences. And the section that I'm looking at is under I. It's I-2B, and it currently reads, height of fence waiver shall only be considered when the grade between two lots has a difference of 2 feet or more and is on the request is for the lower of the two properties. So we would modify that to read, height of fence waiver shall only be considered when the grade between the two lots has a difference of 2 feet or more and the request is made by the owner of the lower of the two properties. Cool.
Okay. Anything further? Yes, Mr. Gigray.
Mr. Mayor, thank you. Members of the council, I would recommend as you proceed that you be very clear with the audience and for the record that you're going to proceed, I guess, with a third reading on the 21st of January, that the record of this proceeding will remain open for written comment, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah.
By affected property owners and interested persons and agencies, and that that written comment will be received, I assume, by staff?
Yes.
And that that will be included in the record and provided to members of the council in your packet for that particular meeting, and that you will take that into consideration before you take a final decision on this matter. I think the idea is that how long the record remains open and what you're willing to consider. That's my point here.
Okay.
As you make your motion for how you're going to proceed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor?
Yes.
Is that a sign-up sheet for public
this
testimony?
This is for the other.
Okay.
For item 6B.
Okay.
But thank you for keeping track of me anyway.
Okay. Feel free to correct me if this is incorrect, okay. Mr. Giggrey. All right, I move we continue the public hearing to the January 21st, 2020 council meeting, at which time, or I guess we will continue to receive written testimony only. Any comment can be submitted to staff for inclusion in our packet.
And I would recommend you set a date in which that would be received. Otherwise, you may end up with comment coming in at 5 o'clock on the day of your meeting, and I think that gets particularly problematic for staff to assemble that, for Chris to be able to get it on the packet, and I believe Chris assembles the packet like the Thursday before. So it seems to me they should be, you should announce a date when that written comment would be received at a certain time.
Probably by January 15th. Would that be comfortable for staff?
Yes.
Would noon on the 16th be acceptable as well or not?
Council President Boumendahar, staff would prefer the day prior in order to get the packets in time by 5 o'clock to get the, meet the cutoff for council.
Okay. I guess I'm still just struggling with the idea that, I mean, somebody would need to attend the school board meeting on the 14th to hear if they talk about this, and then would have to go home and write something to submit it by the next day. Maybe the school board doesn't have anything to say about it, but if we're not accepting actual testimony at the next council meeting, there's very little opportunity for people to be able to address anything new that comes up.
I think that a lot of the stuff can be addressed with the school staff prior to that meeting and should be so that they can take a complete understanding back to the school board so that it should be fairly easy for them to assemble. And if something happens that this doesn't work out, this isn't a do-or-die date, we can also continue the hearing beyond that if the school board has issues and that type of thing. So I think we'll be covered there okay, but
okay.
I agree with your point. But Troy, did you have something you wanted to?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Mayor. For the record, Troy Behunin, senior planner, 751 West 4th Street. So to your point, Council President Boumendahar, everybody that's at this meeting and everyone who listens to the recording online or reads the minutes from this meeting, everyone will be put on notice that they can submit written testimony and that they would be able to attend that meeting in order to hear any presentation or new information from what proceeds from, or comes to us from the school board. It's no different than any other public hearing where the packets are released on a Thursday to council on Friday, and then they have until Tuesday to review it online, and then they can either submit written testimony or they can come in and testify.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but to that point, we are specifically talking about not allowing testimony.
Correct.
So it wouldn't be like every public hearing.
Except that the school district would then be here to present their ideas, or they could read it online when the packet is given to the
Right. Council. I guess my concern is that the first opportunity the majority of the public would have to even see the school district's comments would be when they're published in our packet after the opportunities to submit written testimony has passed. Therefore, people will not, unless they attend the school board meeting, they wouldn't necessarily have the opportunity to address if the school board had comments. Does that make sense?
It does. Okay. But then enters what I was saying before. It's just like every other public hearing. Most people don't know and understand what's going on with a public or with an application until it gets printed online, unless they happen to come into P&Z.
I hear what you're saying, but with most public hearings, they get the chance to show up and testify. So they read through the packet, and then they show up and get to speak about it, and that is specifically not something that we're talking about allowing in this situation. So respectfully, I disagree that it's like every other public hearing. It seems like it's a very unique situation where there wouldn't be an opportunity, really, for people to comment in any way on stuff that's included in the packet.
And so I think that, with our staff working with the school board staff, I think that school district staff, I think that they can make a presentation to the school board. And again, as I said, if there was any discomfort in any of that, if the school board has something they're not comfortable with, again, we can continue this hearing for another to the February 4th meeting or whatever if that need arises.
I guess one potential additional option would be to allow public testimony for the specific and exclusive point of addressing anything in the record like school district feedback that had not already been in the record previously. So we're not rehashing what we've already received, but it would just be for the very limited purpose of addressing brand new information that was not necessarily available to submit a written comment about.
Okay.
It's possible also that I'm overanalyzing this, but just throwing it out there.
But that's your job.
Exactly.
As far as I'm concerned, that's acceptable.
Rich?
I wonder if it wouldn't be easier to just postpone it until the first Tuesday of February to give more ample time for everybody to look at it.
I think with the sole focus right now being the school board.
Well, I'm also concerned because this, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but because this was only published for the first time in this packet, right. I also don't know if we'll get additional feedback from people on this.
Right, and that's where I think we have the week and a half now to respond to what's already currently printed, and that does, in my opinion, just give them ample time to write something down instead of continuing to postpone this. But if it's for the, I think we were all pretty well in agreement until we heard when the it was due and the school board meeting was the day before. If we just make that exception for response to the school board, to just kind of keep it from opening it back up and rehashing everything again, then that would make sense. But I just don't know, again, if it's worth continuing to push off because we'll always get comment. We will. It's just how it goes. So,
what time do we open for business at 8 a.m.? Is that accurate? Okay.
Yes, we do. We open at 8 a.m.
Thank you. So what I might propose then would be that we set the deadline for receipt of written testimony as 8 a.m. on January 16th. The idea being that there's no point in setting a deadline as 5 p.m. if we're not going to see, you know what I mean? People can go ahead and submit when they get home from work. They want to stay up late, whatever. And we'll count the cutoff date as when we turn on our computers the next morning. And then we would, if you guys want, also allow oral testimony specifically about, I don't know if we want to limit it to just comments from the school district or if we would want to make it broader to be like anything that's included in the packet for the first time, or if that's too loosey-goosey. Or
I would think you'd want to open it to total discussion since you've changed the percentages from the original of November 19th. I would prefer open testimony on all issues.
So. I'm not necessarily opposed to that. I mean, whether we receive it in writing or people showing up and talking about it, I would like to get feedback on the new table, and I don't feel like any of the letters, you know, the letters that we got are still largely referencing the original proposal. And that's why I was asking, like, has this been circulated or not? Because nobody's talking about if they're okay with this. And that's, yeah.
I may be wrong, but the letters that I've read are not inclusive as to dates, but I think they're talking more about November 19th than mm-hmm. they are today. So,
agreed.
From the standpoint of the public testimony, I think after they've read and looked at our new proposed numbers, I would like to have open testimony as opposed to new whatever the school provides us with. So
yeah, most of the letters came in either last night or today, but they obviously hadn't read the packet to see the difference.
And so, I think that's what Madam Chairman is trying to emphasize, is the fact that even though it's on our website and may not be open to the public looking at our website. So,
well, I'm fine with having a traditional public hearing instead of just limiting it to written testimony, but I'm open to what others' thoughts are as well.
Bill, is there any reason why we couldn't open it to public testimony?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Councilman Cardoza, absolutely not. And I think it's really the safe play. You could maybe limit the public testimony to the new chart if people have already had an opportunity to address everything else which remains unchanged, which could kind of limit the testimony to what has been presented that's new. You could just leave it open, however you choose.
The only thing I'm concerned about is getting into like the nitpicky woods of if somebody wants to testify about, you know, comparing and contrasting old with new and why we still aren't getting there or something like that. You know what I mean? If are we disallowing all testimony about anything but the original chart, or I don't know.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, that's why I think this is a good discussion, so that you can craft what you're going to accept at the next, if you continue this hearing, and it gives the mayor the opportunity to address anyone who wishes to speak if they get outside the boundaries of what you're going to allow to close that down. Not to, you know, so it's relevant to what you're trying to consider.
I struggle a little bit with the idea of, you know, we want to keep it relevant, but at the same time, it's only 3 minutes. And are we, by trying to craft a very specific kind of structure for what we want people to talk about or not talk about, is there a chance that we're cutting off something relevant? I mean, would it be the end of the world if a couple people got up and spoke for 3 minutes and it was just about the old chart, or, you know, whatever. I don't know.
We've already talked about 35 minutes on the subject. So
I think at this point now, we're in a position, you know, separating ourselves from the school district, that whole discussion. To at this point, limit the public, I guess, and what it is they want to ask or talk about, just with the changes, it's going to be a safe play for us to just reopen it back up. I think there's There's not a whole lot of changes, so there's not a whole lot of new discussion to be had, but.
Okay, so last question then, now that we've completely turned a corner. By the way, my motion is withdrawn from earlier. Are we looking at still January 21st?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and with being able to testify orally, that should address any issues with the school district stuff. Okay. I move we continue the public hearing to the January 21st meeting, at which time we will receive oral testimony as with a normal public hearing.
Second.
Okay.
All right, so the motion is made and seconded to reopen the public hearing on Jan. We will continue this public hearing and reopen it for public testimony, oral and written, for the January 21st meeting. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Realized I did not actually say what ordinance we were talking about in my motion. Do I need to restate that?
No, I think we're on the same subject. It should be fine.
Okay. All right.
All right. That brings us to a new one. This is a public hearing in consideration to approve a new water and sewer system fees policy. Bob Bachman, Public Works Director.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. A little over a year ago, we were tasked with doing a rate study that included water user rates, sewer user rates, sewer hookup fees, and water hookup fees. Tonight, we'll present the findings of that to you, and we had hired a third party to do that study, and that was Justin Walker with Keller and Associates. So we will let him go through the presentation, and then Jared and myself will stand for questions along with Justin. And do want you guys to know that we know this is a tough decision. We presented the facts as they are, and we know that's going to be a tough decision to make. And we did not make that recommendation lightly. And with that, we will invite Justin up to do his presentation.
Justin, hi, thank you.
Thank you, good evening. Good to be with you. Justin Walker, 131 Southwest 5th Avenue, Meridian, Idaho. It is great to be with you tonight. I see some familiar faces from 15 years back. Been working on and off with the city for that long time, so it's good to be with you tonight. I also recognize it's a bit of a sensitive and emotional subject, and would just say that our recommendations that are outlined in the presentation and in the report came after extensive research, extensive analysis, and modeling, extensive collaboration with your staff. And feel like they're well thought out and are also consistent with typical utility rates. So is this the way you want to present this, or do you want to hit the slide, the begin slide? Show.
What slide is it?
Well,
Should be a slideshow button.
We forgot our glasses at home, did we?
Yeah, you know, that was 15 years of bad heart on my eyes. You see how to start the slideshow? While they're doing that, just a little bit of framework here for the council and also for the public that is listening in. There are really two primary sources of revenue for municipalities. One is monthly user fees, which come in the form of a monthly bill, water and sewer bill in this particular case. And then those should be adequate to cover operation, maintenance, debt, and replacement costs for the existing system. And they shouldn't really be subsidized by growth, because if you have an event like 2007, where you essentially have zero growth for 5 years, and your utility is largely funded by connection fees, then you really struggle, and it's not a sustainable model. The other source of revenue is a connection or hookup fee. and that's collected from new customers, new connections. Should really be a capacity buy-in concept or philosophy where the connection fee is equivalent to the value of the capacity that that connection uses in the system. And it's typically assessed on an equivalent dwelling unit basis, or EDU is an acronym we often use. Okay, so with that framework, the other thing I would just say is specific to rate structures, really try to make them stable. How do I advance my slides? Sorry.
Tell me.
Go a couple slides. Sorry, right there. Thanks. I'll kind of point out where I'm trying to remember to do that. So, again, some objectives when establishing a rate structure. You want them to be stable. You want your income to be stable to the utility so that that just allows your staff to better manage and budget for expenses. You want it to incentivize conservation because we live in a desert. And water is expensive, and it's a rare commodity, particularly in CUNA. And then we also want to try to make it as equitable as possible, meaning it should be linked as closely as possible to the actual usage that a customer uses. So with those kind of guiding principles, that's a framework for our analysis that we did. So we're going to start with the water system. We're going to look at the rates first, and we'll talk about the connection fees, and then we'll switch to the sewer system. So that's how the presentation is organized. So go ahead and go to the next slide. I actually have the same data presented in two different ways because some people just understand it differently. So the next two slides are exactly the same data. I'm just presenting them to one in a line chart, and the next one's in more of a bar chart. Okay, but the blue line on the slide, the dashed blue line, represents the actual revenue historically over the last 5 years that the city of CUNA collected in their water rate or their water utility. The dashed purple line, let me start with the solid red line. The solid red line is your operating expenditures. Those expenditures include both fixed costs and variable costs. And when I mean that, I mean your salaries to your employees, for example, are largely fixed. It doesn't matter if you sell 1 million gallons of water or 3 million gallons of water in a year. You're going to essentially have the same staff. So those are fixed costs, insurance costs, things like that, all your administrative costs. Those are fixed costs. Whether you sell a drop of water or not, you're still going to incur those costs. And then variable costs are related to power and chemicals and things like that. That really are dependent on how much water you actually produce. And so the solid red line is your actual costs, again, over the last 5 years. The purple dashed line is the added cost for depreciation. So wise utility owners set aside funds that can either be called a replacement budget or call it depreciation. It's essentially the same thing. As your infrastructure, the useful life expires, you're going to have to replace that. And so setting aside funds to do that will prevent you from having to go out and secure debt every time you got to make a major improvement to your system to replace existing infrastructure. So in a perfect world, the blue line would exceed the purple line. And in the water's utility case, that is what the data shows. Over the last 5 years, your income kept up and actually outpaced your expenses. And so that's great. What I would say about your existing rate structure, which really your existing rate structure has a base fee of $21.02, I think, plus a consumptive fee of $1.75 per 1,000 gallons. And that base fee of $21 allots every customer 10,000 gallons. Okay, the average water usage per equivalent dwelling unit is around 5 or 6,000 gallons. Okay? So your current structure doesn't really incentivize conservation. And many might argue it's not very equitable because a single person uses a few thousand gallons a month is going to pay the same as my family of 10, which might use 10,000 gallons a month. So we did a look at other structures. So go ahead and go to the next slide. I probably should have done that. Again, same exact data, same numbers, just presented different ways. The red is existing or historical expenses. Green is the replacement budget depreciation, and the blue is what you actually brought in as income. Go ahead. Go ahead and click through these. So we looked at different structures. Hopefully, I keep clicking here. We looked at different structures. We looked at a flat rate. We looked at a simple tier structure. And then really landed and settled on an increasing rate structure, increasing tier rate structure. And that's what you see here. The black bar is kind of the average water usage. The green is a different rate for that first tier of usage. And so forth. You can see how that kind of, so the people that use the most water would fall in the category of the pink, yellow, whatever color
orange.
That is.
Yeah.
They would be using the most water, and they would be paying a higher price for that usage. So the cost of the water goes up with each tier, and we call it an increasing tier rate structure. And that's what we, in collaboration with your staff, settled on as the best, most equitable all structure that, you know, incentivize, again, those basic objectives that we talked about earlier. So with that framework, please stop me if you would like to talk about anything more. I'll just keep kind of chugging through here and happy to respond to questions anytime. So with that framework then, we looked at about almost 10 different rate scenarios, alternatives. So we built a model, a spreadsheet model, of every one of your customers for 12 months of actual usage, their actual usage. And then we simulated all of these alternatives with actual data, your customer's data. And we did that so that we could recognize what was the actual rate that people would pay and what actual revenue would you generate based on these different alternatives. So there was quite a bit of analysis that went into this. This was the recommended alternative. Let me just kind of talk you through this table because there's a lot on there. The base tier, base cost, is that monthly cost. You're going to pay that regardless of how much usage you have. Even if you have zero usage, that's a cost that would be assessed to every connection to your water system. And in this scenario, it also would allot each customer 5,000 gallons. And so there's four categories here because that's the categories of users that you have right now. Residential, senior residential, commercial with a 3/4-inch meter, and then I didn't list it, but there's a note here. You have another commercial category with a 2-inch meter, and I'm giving you the existing rate structure on the bottom row just so you can compare it to the structure or to the recommended scenario. So again, the base tier column, that first column, is the monthly cost, and then you can see the costs for each tier and what usage would be applied to that rate. One thing to note here, at the top of this table there, we have percentages, 50, 20, 20, 10. What that means is that 50% of your customers fall in that first base usage, so the first column. In other words, 50% of your customers use 5,000 gallons or less. 20% of your customers use that first tier. Another 20% use that second tier, and only 10% of your customers fall in that third tier. Okay, so that's what those numbers represent. So what does it all mean? Well, the average monthly bill for a typical or for an average residential customer is about $19 and a little bit. And if you use the same break as you have now for a senior residential customer, it would be just a little less than $17. And you can compare that to the existing residential, which is $22. So actually, our recommendation will result in a decrease in the water bill for most of your customers. Those that are using a lot of water will see an increase, obviously, in their monthly water bill. We're proposing a slightly, and this is really in collaboration with your staff, a slightly different scenario for commercial. Rather than using tiers, we're just saying you're going to pay a base fee, and then you're going to pay a cost per 1,000 gallons, and it's kind of a set cost. Right now, you have your assessment is based on EDUs, and it's quite complex,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard to manage. And when they change, it's pretty complicated, difficult to maintain process. So this is much simpler, and we believe more equitable.
Right.
So that's the water recommendation. Any questions about recommendations? Okay. Then we're going to transition. I'm going to show you a couple charts that compare this, both your existing and your recommended structure rate, to other communities here right in the Treasure Valley. So that's what you're seeing. In short, your water bill, both now and certainly with the recommended changes, would be in the lower bracket of the communities here in the Valley.
Just because I'm having trouble reading it, so I imagine the audience might be as well. Am I seeing correctly that the first bar is our current rate and the second bar is the recommended changes?
For and then average.
Right, for the average residential. And then it moves on to, it looks like Emmett, Star, Middleton, Wilder, Eagle, New
Weezer,
Plymouth.
Weezer, okay. New Plymouth, Payette, Meridian, Boise, Garden City. I even have to squint at my
Nampa, Caldwell.
Nampa and Caldwell.
Okay.
Perfect. And it's based on all the same usage. So we said your average customer used, I can't remember exactly if it's 6,500 gallons. So that was the usage that was used, applied to every one of the communities because they often, most of them have a rate-based or usage-based structure. And so we use that same usage for every community.
Okay.
But it really truly is an apples-to-apples comparison.
Got it. Thank you.
Great question.
Justin.
Yeah.
If we lower the rate, will this lower the rate revenue in proportion to the operating expenses?
Great question. Actually, that's why we modeled every customer. Actually, no. Your rate, your revenue, if you review the report, the revenue actually won't drop. Your revenue will stay the same, if not a slightly higher. And you might say, well, how can that be possible? Well, it's because those that use a lot more water are paying significantly more. And so they more than compensate for the loss in revenue from your 50% of your users. So actually the revenue, if you had the same usage as I think we used 2018, your revenue would actually slightly increase, even with the reduction in your average water bill.
Okay. Thank
Great
you.
Question. Other questions? Okay, shifting gears then. If you can go to the next slide, we're going to talk a little bit about water connection fees, and I'll provide again some framework here that will apply to the sewer connection fee when we get there. But in short, we used an equity buy-in concept when calculating a connection fee. And what we do, we don't calculate what it should be. That's your decision. What we calculate is what the maximum you can charge and still comply with state statute. Okay, so that's what we did. And in short, what we did is we said, what's the replacement value of all of your existing infrastructure today, in today's dollars? And then we subtracted any unfunded depreciation, meaning, if you have a 20-year-old Volkswagen, it's not fair to say a new customer should buy you a brand new Volkswagen. If that makes sense. They should be buying into the same value that exists today, and that's what the statute says. And so we had to depreciate the infrastructure to today's condition, but using today's dollars. So we subtracted unfunded depreciation. If your infrastructure has been maintained, which much of it has, and is still in essentially good condition, working condition, its useful life is new, then the value was reflected in our assessment. We also then subtracted any debt obligation. I don't think you have any, or if I remember correctly, you don't have any in your water system. So we took that number divided by your total system capacity and calculated a value per connection or per EDU. And that's the maximum connection fee that you could charge without subjecting yourself to a contest from a developer. It says I'm being unfairly charged. Okay, so that's the concept. You can go to the next slide. The next table you can't read. It wasn't intended to be readable. But that's our spreadsheet. And so there's columns for each one of those things that I just talked about and how we arrived at, for example, the replacement value. Well, how do you do that? Well, some facilities and infrastructure, we have recent costs. So in any event, that's the spreadsheet. It's in the it's in the report if you want to see all of it in its detail. And so what were the results? The results are your current connection fee for the water system is just under $2,600. The maximum you could charge based on this assessment we did is $3,100. And I think the staff's recommendation is to assess a connection fee of $2,848, which is about halfway between the two. So the next slide shows, again, a comparison to other communities here in the Valley, same communities. The first chart is what it is today. The next chart is what the city recommended number is, the $2,848, and then you can kind of see all these other communities. And there's quite, as you can see, quite a variance in connection fees.
Can I just stop you for a second?
Yeah,
it's
sure.
That one, it's harder. Am I correct that it's harder to do an apples-to-apples comparison because you'd have to know the value of, like, yeah, their replacement value, whether they have uncredited depreciation, et cetera, or?
Well, I can't say how they calculated their connection fee, so I don't know. I don't know how they arrived at their number. I'm just saying that's what their number is.
That's what they're currently charging?
Yeah.
Got it.
Having said that, it is a little more challenging because some communities include the water meter in their connection fee and some don't. And so I'm not sure about every one of those. We tried, when we developed this chart, we tried to make it as close to an apples-to-apples comparison as we could. Some communities have a water. The other reason that they aren't, you can't always compare them perfectly, is some communities have straight groundwater supply, like yours. Other communities have a sophisticated water treatment facility. Well, naturally, their infrastructure is probably going to be higher and typically leads to a higher connection fee because their technology is more expensive. And so, but it does give you, when somebody comes and buys a house, they don't know all that, and they're just looking at the market. And, so we do provide this so that you can at least see how you stack up with other communities, recognizing that when somebody tries to decide where they want to move, a connection fee is part of that decision. I'm not going to say how much it is, but it probably is. So, other questions about the connection fee and how we arrived at it? So, if you look at the data, you're in the upper third. There's some higher, there's plenty lower. But. All right. We'll go ahead and go to the sewer then. You're going to hear, essentially, you're going to see all the same information. It's just with the sewer data. And so go ahead and go to the next slide. This is your historical trends. It's a little less desirable trend and condition. The red line, again, being your actual expenditures for your operating expenditures. The purple line being the additional or cumulative cost with depreciation replacement and the blue dashed line being what you brought in. And again, of course, the blue line you want to be at or above the purple line. So you can see a pretty significant deficiency there. You can go to the next slide. It's the same data, I mean, same numbers, just presented differently. So again, kind of click through these. Probably shouldn't have put all that, but go back one if you can, thanks. So a slightly different scenario here. On the water, we used monthly water usage. But for a sewer system, because of irrigation, you can't use a monthly, well, it's advisable not to use monthly because people then would be paying for water that isn't going into the sewer system during the summer months because of irrigation. So we are recommending you use an average winter water usage. And so that's what those blue arrows are, targeting January, February, November, December. So you would keep track of an average for those months, and that would be the basis for your monthly, your sewer bill through that year. And so, but it still has the same tiers. We didn't show it in colors, but that's what our recommendation does still have the tier structure, but it's just, again, average winter usage. So you can go to the next slide. So this is the recommended recommended rate structure, same organization here. The base sewer bill for residential is, we're recommending to be $35. Currently it's $27.30. And then each tier has $3 per thousand, $4 per thousand, and $5 per thousand gallons used within each of those tiers, which results in an average residential sewer bill of $38. Current bill is $27.30, just to give you a comparison. So it's a significant increase. And then you can see the breakdowns for the senior residential and the commercial. Once again, same philosophy for commercial. We're just saying charge it. And instead of trying to calculate how many EDUs and things like that, we're just saying charge it on a per thousand, actual water usage per thousand. The next chart shows a comparison to other communities. The first column being the existing sewer bill. You can see you're really on the bottom end of every other community we looked at. And we didn't handpick these, we just grabbed communities representative of different sizes here, Treasure Valley. And then you can see what the proposed monthly bill would be, and you're kind of right in the middle. I mean, there's some higher, certainly some lower, but then connection fee here, same analysis we did for the water, and those are the numbers that flushed out of our analysis. You could charge up to $6,300. Your staff was recommending the $5,655, which is, again, right kind of in the middle of the two of the range. And then the next chart shows those comparisons. You are definitely on the high end of this, of the communities we looked at. Actually, probably the highest of those communities that we looked at with the recommended connection fee. The last slide, last couple slides really are just, again, some thoughts to consider as you consider implementing rate structures in general. We have found that it's typically best to take small bites and do regular rate increases rather than big step increases. Think long term, not just, you know, what are we doing now to meet our immediate need, but look into the future. Educate the public and then help the public recognize that in reality, municipal sewer and water systems are tremendous value. I mean, we pay a few bucks for a bottle of water. That's 10 times the cost as what they pay for your water, maybe 100 times. And so while it is an impact to their pocketbook, and I don't mean to minimize that, there is great value in municipal sewer and water systems. And so helping the public recognize and appreciate that is wise. So with that, I have one more slide. I'd be happy to stand for any questions that you might have.
I got a question for you, and it's just based on a few numbers here. For water base usage, here in the packet on page 17, it talks about, I thought it was page 17, talks about average usage.
Are you in the report itself?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm looking at, I'm trying to go back to find it here. There was water usage of 5,800 gallons. Now, I know you talked about it being a 50% below 5,000, 50% above, so I understand that the average is going to be different than that. So when you put together a base here, what was the logic behind basing it on just a 50% exactly down the middle as opposed to an actual average usage here in the city?
Well, actually, that 50%, that is your city. Maybe I'm not understanding
okay,
the question.
Okay, so
but.
The average usage for CUNA residents is 5,800, implying that the average CUNA resident's going to be in the tier one regardless.
Right, okay.
They're not going to be in the base tier. What's the logic behind that?
I think if I can try to jump in, because Greg and I, by the way, were on like the subcommittee for this, so we saw the whole report already, and we talked through the different approaches, the 50-20-20-10. We also looked at other structures where we, like, made the base. I don't remember what it was, 60 or 70% was one of them. Anyway, we did a whole bunch of them. I think the challenge that we're encountering is the top 10% skews off the whole average. Like, there's such a small number of people up there, but they use so much water that it drags the whole up. Yeah, so if we're talking average versus...
The median is different than the average.
And I just wanted to understand why we focus on the median as opposed to the average, but that clears it up right away, because that makes sense.
Yeah, those high water uses skew the average water usage up above the median.
But 50% of residential users will fall under the base tier, right? So their water bill will go down.
That's right.
And then depending on how much you use in tier one, in theory, your bill will still go down and so on and so forth. But yeah, so we were trying to hit it where I think including the base rate as well as tier one, we're at 70% of users who shouldn't see an increase in their bill, at least, and might see a decrease depending on how much you use.
Okay. Thank you.
Great question. And then, so we still have a certain amount of users that don't have access to pressurized irrigation. Are we considering that for those folks so that we're not going to, I mean, really, their use is going to be up? That's why we've had the hesitation to drop below the 10,000 gallon for quite some time.
Yeah, and I guess what I would say to that, Mayor, is my understanding when we talked about that as part of the study, and my understanding was that the additional cost they might pay on a monthly basis would represent or be similar to the pressure irrigation fee that those that do have separate pressure irrigation pay.
So we don't foresee a major impact on those people.
Right.
Just because we're not able to get that
because they don't have
them
pressure irrigation available to them.
Yeah. Okay.
In the report, we actually developed an actual estimated water bill for the top 20 water users just to get an idea of what impact it would have on those high water users. And so you can look through that in the report. But we did look at those top water
but
users.
But I don't see the top water user as what PI. I guess I did see that in there.
It is in there, and whether or not they, you know, we don't know if they don't have water, separate pressure irrigation or not. We just know how much water they use. And
well, some have the ability to get it. And
yeah.
If not, too, that's a different story than the ones that we just can't get that service to because yeah. It's not feasible to get that line in.
Do you want to comment at all, Bob, or no? It's okay to say no.
Mayor and Council, we did look at that quite extensively, and I believe what Justin was referring to is when you look at it over the calendar year, it was hard to determine the PI users, what their yearly rate would be without using that for PI. So the assumption is with 50% or more of the customers in the base tier, that the months they are not using PI, and they would fall in the base tier versus and saving on the $98 or whatever it is for the pressurized irrigation bill would hopefully wash out and also would be a incentive to get hooked up to PI for those that could and try to get everybody moving towards that goal.
I know there are a few that we can't get the line anywhere near the home, so.
Correct.
Those are the ones I'm wondering about if there needs to be a special consideration or did we consider that? We certainly can't punish people that we can't do something for that are already in the city. And,
sure.
I mean, I know we've tried to get as many of those as we can, but.
Sure. We did try to look at that as best as we could with the way the rate structure is, and hoping it would balance out.
That's certainly something you could do.
That's why I'm thinking.
It becomes an issue, then.
That need that consideration just because of the fact that they're going to get hammered hard for either that or maybe gravel for the yard. Better, so. Okay.
Justin?
Yeah.
On Appendix A, the existing CUNA EDU guide, did that take in consideration the EDUs that went with the LID?
I'm not sure what your question is, but there was a piece of the study here that we really didn't talk about because I understand that it's already been decided on by the council, but or by the staff, but I guess I'm not sure which. But we did provide an analysis of different methodologies for calculating EDUs, and that is spelled out in the report, and I think Appendix A is what has some of the different ways that EDUs are calculated. As it relates to the LID, it's not really relevant to, I mean, I'm not sure how it's relevant to you. This is just a methodology for how to calculate them.
If the city was selling EDUs, they would get 100% of the money, okay? Right now, some of those EDUs are outstanding and sold by others. So we're not getting that revenue in. And I think that's why the red line or whatever it is diminished so much. Have you looked into when, or maybe the mayor knows, when the EDUs will be completely sold to where we will be selling our own EDUs?
So that still is going to depend on the rate of sale.
Right.
It's happening much quicker than before, but I think Bob can maybe answer your question a little bit better.
Yes, Mayor and Council, the EDU actually is for expansion of the system, not upkeep of the system. So it's two different pools of money, if you will. The EDU that we collect, which is a hookup fee, buys into the system to expand the system and treat the system. So it's two different pools of money. The user rates are completely separate from that. And the just so you guys know, the $500 that we're recommending to increase would not be in the portion that is involved in the LID. It would be the interceptor fee that the city collects of $829. Would be the portion of the EDU that goes up by $500. So the city would see that, and it would help make sure that development is paying for itself.
So it would not be assessed as an EDU. It would have a separate nomenclature.
No, there's three pieces of an EDU. There's the interceptor fee, the portion that you're referring to that goes to pay off the LID, and then there's a it's a trunk line. So there's three pieces of it, and the piece that we collectively comes to $5,155. The LID portion is $3,300. So
which is a fixed dollar amount. If you raise your connection fee, that those additional funds go to the city.
It would not be an additional fee to the EDUs that are outstanding to private industry. They would not get the additional $500, is what you're saying.
The city would get it. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And it, as Bob said, that red line that we were talking about, that's the user rate side. So it has nothing to do with the connection okay. fee revenue. So different pots of money.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
I noticed in one of your slides it said, that it might be better to do a tiered approach. I don't want to use the word tiered. Do a phase-in step. Approach. Yeah. When we're raising, if fees need to be raised, so that it's not such a gut punch right all at once. However, the way that the new ordinances are written reflect just going ahead and punching the whole thing in at once. Yeah. If we wanted to take a more phased approach, would the amounts need to change?
You mean the ultimate dollar amount?
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, if the base rate for sewer, if we're targeting at 35, yeah. but we, because it's like a $10 a month sure. increase for the average person, if we phase that in over, say, 5 years, would it need to actually be like 38 or, some other amount? Have we factored any of that in or?
Yes, so there is like five alternatives for increasing your rates in the report, one of which is what you see in the presentation. That was the one that I think staff asked that we present. So to answer your question, yes, if you wanted to take a stepped approach in raising your rates, particularly for sewer, right, because we're actually lowering them for water, but for the sewer, we would recommend that you not change the tier rate, but that you would slowly increase your base rate. So that first column, instead of going to 35 initially, you might choose to say, we're going to go from, I think it's 27 now, 27 to 31 or 30. And then in a year or 2 years, we're going to go up another couple of dollars. The only disadvantage of that, of course, is that you're going to be short revenue for those few years, and so the ultimate number might actually be higher, right? Because you're going to lose out on revenue for the next however long it takes for you to get to the 38. And so to end up at the same revenue, you may have to actually go above 38 by the time you get there.
So my apologies if it was actually in here and I didn't see it, but is my recollection was just that that the various options were more of how we split out the fees. So, like, do we do a 50-20-20-10, mm-hmm. or do we do – was there something in here that I missed that talked more about here's how you can get to this same end goal but over a period of time instead of it all at once?
Page 34 of 108.
Thank you.
Talk about percentage increase over a period of time.
Okay.
I hope that's what you're looking for, and it's 34 of 108 just in that presentation packet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so page 25, 26, 27, 28. What page?
I'm sorry, page 34 of 108.
Oh, you're looking at the PDF.
Yeah, in the PDF.
Okay, because that's definitely not the page number on the bottom. But
It's the summary page right before Appendix A.
So for the sewer, it would be included in figure 11, figure 12, figure 13, figure 14 were four different scenarios that we evaluated for increasing your rates. If you want me to talk about that, we can. But.
I'm good.
Okay. Very good. Any further questions for Justin? Did you have anything else you wanted to do?
No. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So this is a public hearing. I had one person sign up to testify. Was there anybody else who wished to testify who didn't get a chance to sign in on the sheet? Okay. If you somebody want to grab this and take it to.
Damn, that's the most I've seen the chief move in quite a while.
Rude.
Thank you so much. So the first person we had up was Lance Gumerell that signed in on the opposition side.
Yeah, and I kind of varied.
Yeah, if you would just state your name and address okay. for the record.
My name is Lance Gumerell. I'm at 935 Strike Way here in CUNA.
Okay.
And council and mayor, I wish to kind of address my concerns. I vacillated between whether I was neutral or against this. And one of the things that really struck that really struck me and kind of swayed me was that in the resolutions, it has a February implementation date. And I went back and calculated because I only saw it in the paper from Thursday. I went back and calculated a couple of my bills. I'm not a $5,000 a month user. I'm probably between $5,000 and $10,000. And so I went through and calculated my bills. And the rate increase was substantial. I understand that, like, for the sewer, we need to get to where it's fiscally maintainable. And so I would see the primary increase being there. But for the water usage, I felt like it penalizes older homeowners where maybe appliances aren't as water-friendly. It penalizes larger families. I just felt like the implementation was kind of unrealistic. Models are a great thing, but in the practical sense, you know, I want to be encouraged to conserve water, but I don't want to be the person held hostage to it either. I came here for a quality of life, and if I wanted I just feel like it holds you hostage, and I don't think it's reasonable to expect people to be able to jump below that 5,000. I think you encourage it through public awareness. I think you encourage it through rate increases. But given the implementation dates, I just felt it was totally unreasonable. I can see it on the sewer side based on their study and the cost. So that's pretty much all I had to say on it. And I appreciate your time.
Okay. Well, thank you, Lance. Like I said, I appreciate that you come out and give us that. And this is something that I'm having some trouble with, because I know there's some people that this is going to impact. Some people are going to come out really well on the water, and there's going to be others that maybe
take a hit.
So
yes, Mayor,
it's
and I think
tough.
If you're a two-household a two-person household, sure, you're going to stay under the 5 gallons. But if you've got more people than that, or you have extra needs for water, it really penalizes you. And I don't think that's a fair representation to the broader base. So, thank you.
Well, like I said, we won't take this decision lightly, and I again appreciate you coming up. Did anybody else have any questions for Lance?
No.
Okay.
No. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Lance.
Oh, Jim Eberhard, if you would like, come up. And I appreciate that you had sent your questions earlier for staff to look through. That was good, and I appreciate your questions because they're well thought out, and it seems like you almost know what you're talking about. So.
Well, thank you, Mayor.
Appreciate you coming in.
And congratulations to everyone being signed in, sworn in again.
Thank you.
I guess I state my name, Jim Eberhard, and
yes.
332 East Northridge Drive, CUNA. Sorry about that. But
close enough.
That's how I hear it on the phone every day. So In a great study, the presentation there was very informative, and I really liked what the gentleman said about educating people. I've educated myself in energy conservation and efficiency in lighting, heating, cooling, and water in my home. I spend a lot of money to do that. And the other utilities that I use, specifically electricity and gas, reward me for that investment. So that my investment is a high initial cost, but after a certain period, I start to get a return on my investment. I start putting money in my pocket because I made the initial investment in efficiency. That hasn't happened with water. I have put in a tankless water heater with a circulating pump on it, so and the line that runs down to the farthest point of the water line and circulate it so that when I open the faucet, in about 2 seconds, I have hot water. Okay? That's a, and I've insulated the pipes to keep the heat in. Again, you know efficiency. So I've done reviews of my bill from 17, 18, and 19, and my gallons a day per occupant range from 28 to 57. The national average is 80. Idaho, 140 gallons a day. I don't quite understand that. So my investment in it goes into low flow fixtures, high efficiency flushing toilets that I only flush one time and I'm done. I'm not having to flush it three times or four times and plunge it, you know, that sort of stuff. I've made a significant investment in all this, and I'm not getting any kind of return on my investment with the water. In the commercial recommendation is a flat base rate and then a dollar per thousand of usage. Why not do that with the residential? Everyone who uses the water pays what they use. As it is right now, I pay for 120,000 gallons of water. I have, you know, each year.
I'll give you time to wrap up, don't worry.
Okay, and I'm using 12,000. The previous gentleman talked about inequity. That's a pretty steep fee, cost for me. And to get to a higher usage, I have taken, and in the morning, I get up, while I'm reading the paper and the headlines, I open my kitchen faucet and I let it run every morning for an hour to 2 hours, whatever it takes me to read the paper. And in December of this year, I was finally able to get my usage up to 5,600 gallons. Who and how do you leave a faucet open for that many hours a month? Education. Holy crap.
That's a good way to put it. So our staff actually kind of went through, you had a pretty good list of questions, and they've gone through and they've kind of answered those. So when we get to that part, you'll kind of hear the answers to some of your questions there. And I think that'll help with at least our theories on this. Yeah. And this is not something we're taking lightly, and we're going to work hard on. I think we're coming a long way from where we were. We may not get to what you're looking for there, but eventually we probably will. But I appreciate your comments. It makes a lot of sense, and like you say, I think maybe even in the entirety of Idaho, like you say, that we really haven't been pushing for conservation, and so I hope that we can work on that over time.
To pay for upfront 5,000 gallons every month, there is absolutely zero incentive for conservation there. It doesn't work that way. And hasn't, obviously, so.
Yeah. Okay.
All righty.
All right, but we'll address some of the questions that you sent in a little bit.
And in the survey did, too, and I didn't have access to all that stuff, so I probably wouldn't have asked all those.
It's good. It's good, though. I think that stirred some good conversation that we're going to have now. So
okay.
I appreciate you sending those in.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. Okay. So we have the presentation from Justin. Did you want to go over that stuff, or I don't know. However, does council have some questions you want to get into now, or?
Mayor and council, I do think a lot of it was already answered. But if we come across anything more specific to that, I would obviously be willing to answer that. At this time, I think we're just prepared to answer any questions you guys might have.
I think didn't you do some comparisons with, I think Las Vegas was one of the places that they talked about, and just kind of put that in perspective so that we know what that dollar amount means and gallon amount.
Yeah, Mayor, that's actually a good point. What we found was there were some comparisons made from other states or cities, a larger, I think New York, Las Vegas, Chicago. So we took a quick look at those as best we could with the time we had to work with. And what we found is some of the rates you actually see that they're charging is just how much it costs for the water to get to your tap. And then there's additional service charges, administrative fees, and all kinds of other fees on top of that are already reflected in our base rate of $17 that we're recommending. So that's what we found in a lot of the other cities is the rates you're seeing is for water usage, but it wouldn't be what your bill is because they have administrative fees, bonds and other things that incorporate and actually inflate your monthly cost. Where we don't have any bonds or anything, our price does reflect how much it costs to get the water to your tap and all the administrative fees, repairs, maintenance, and everything else that it costs to operate the system. So I think that's a difference in the way we bill. And we also don't have the luxury, or maybe it's a good thing, but we're not spreading it across 3 or 4 million people or a million people. So let's not do that yet. So I hope that answers your question on what we were able to find. You're welcome.
Good. Thanks, Bob. Okay. Richard.
If I could elaborate on Bob, I went online with Las Vegas, a 5/8 water meter. They have a bill of $18.76, a base charge. The first 2,000 gallons are $5.80. Next 4,000 gallons is $26.12. If you were to go 5,000 gallons in Las Vegas, you would be paying $50.68. If you were to go 2,000 gallons, you'd be paying $24.56. And if you went 10,000 gallons, which we are allowing now, you would be at $109.44. So it looks like we're kind of in the ballpark with the first 5,000 for $17.67. In Vegas, you'd be paying $50.68. So,
Mayor and Council, that's pretty much identical to what we found as well.
These rates are based on 2016 was the most current I could find today. So.
Well, then I'm not moving to Vegas.
Yeah, it probably went down, I'm sure, since 2016. So, but okay. I think it gives you a good idea of what other cities are doing. Kind of like Bob says, there's a base charge, and then they charge for each gallon of water thereafter, after the 2,000. So,
Okay. Further discussion? I know that Brianna and Greg have been sitting in on a lot of this stuff, and it is a lot to absorb. I've been reading this over the past several months, and still come up with questions every other day. So I think where this is a rate consideration in that, I think we'd probably be wise to continue for the full three readings. And but any further comments?
Good. No, definitely.
I was just going to ask Bob to comment, if you have any comments, it's okay if you don't, on your thoughts on, I guess, the advisability of moving forward with what's proposed. So just full increase right up front so that we start hitting those targets more immediately, versus doing a more staggered implementation over 3 or 5 years.
Mayor and Council, thank you for that question. We stand by the recommendation we made. We have heard the testimony and we understand that, and we did consider, knowing the impact that that was going to have on the community on the sewer side, but we feel the effect of waiting could have greater potential impact by far than implementing this. And we desperately need to maintain it going forward, whichever decision we go, as far as keeping up on that, instead of, you know, waiting as long as we did to come with you guys with a rate adjustment. But we definitely stand by the recommendation we made, and we feel it's imperative. I can give you just a really quick example of what happens to us in the blink of an eye. Just this weekend, for no reason, we lost a $25,000 pump. That doesn't sound like a lot of money for a pump, but the impact that has is a trickle-down effect, because it basically shuts one of our lift stations down, which is vital to our sewer system. Those are the kind of things that we have to be able to react and fix, and the aging infrastructure in the ground. And we feel that the longer we wait, the greater those problems become. Most of our lift stations are, since really we saw 2004, 2005 is really when the growth took off, most of our parts are good for 15 to 20 years. So a lot of that is expiring now. The last thing we want to do is have to come in front of the council or the citizens and have more serious talk about infrastructure bonds or massive rate increases to pay for the infrastructure. We feel that it's the proposal we made is responsible and gets us back on track to not have to do this again.
Do we have, so that's just something else I'm trying to think of. Do we know about what this rate increase means per month for income for the city? I may be getting to a point there, but I'm not sure exactly. So like if we did this tomorrow, how much more money would we bring in next month?
I can tell you.
I wouldn't really even be so much into the connection fee part of it, so much as just the user rate part.
Per month, you want to know?
Yeah.
Hang on.
Oh, you're good. My math skills. $4.35.
You mean total, like total overall for the city, right? Yeah.
Difference, okay. Between what we're paying now and what the new rates would be. You're paying $21.02 for water.
If my math is correct.
$27.30.
If my math is correct, we would be talking about a difference of $132,469 per month in additional. If we went ahead and did, and this is how I'm getting there in case you guys want to check my math. I'm on page 446 total of the packet. It's page 31 of 108 of the rate study. And I'm looking at table 26, our 2018 user-based revenue of just under $1.8 million, and then 2019 with the rate increase showing the average monthly user rate going from 2730 to 38. So I took the user base revenue from 2019, the almost 3.4 million, subtracted the 1.8 from 2018, and then divided that by 12. And that is how I got that number. Is that totally wrong? I'm right.
Yes, Mayor and Council. So those numbers would probably be accurate. If the rates were increased immediately, the idea, at least on the sewer end, was to raise revenue by approximately $1 million per year as of 2018 capacity, or how many EDUs or users were in the system. So at least on revenue was increased by 80,000-90,000 on the sewer side, I mean, then that would make sense that it would be 30,000-40,000 per month on the water end too. So those numbers seem accurate to me.
And note, this chart doesn't include, it just has a flat average number of EDUs. It doesn't include like new growth EDUs and that sort. So it might fiddle a little bit, but yeah.
Okay, that's close enough. I don't even know where I'm going with that yet. But thank you.
So I know this is a really hard question to answer, Bob, but and if you want to wait until the next public hearing and think about it until then, that's fine. Understanding definitively that your preference would be to implement the whole thing at once, I would love to hear your opinion on what would be the maximum we could sustain in terms of a slow roll. So would that be, look, we have to get this done ASAP, so the maximum I could swallow you guys slow rolling this would be like 2 years or 3 years or whatever. Or, I mean, if your answer is like absolutely, I just don't think there's any responsible way to do this other than all at once. And like I said, if you want some time to think about it and address it at the next meeting, that's fine.
Mayor and Council, Chris just let me know that this is a resolution, so there actually isn't three readings.
Well, we can table it.
Okay. Yeah, I would probably have to, if you wanted a secondary recommendation.
Yeah, I mean, and I fully understand that your recommendation is just do it now. But is there a less desirable but still potentially responsible option? And if so, what would you feel comfortable with?
Mayor and Council, I will definitely take that in consideration, but I do have to say that I do believe, as my job as the Public Works Director for the City of Kuna, I would be irresponsible to recommend anything else. But I would also respect your guys' wishes and decision and implement whatever you ask me to do.
My concern is really just coming from with property values going up so much and rent going up so much and thinking about what a monthly utility bill is and you know how much that normally would be and then what this kind of increase would do to somebody. I just worry about if people could stomach, you know, an extra $10 a month right from the jump, and if there would be a way that we could even cut that in half and just do it over 2 years or something like that. It might just be a little bit easier for people to budget for, or especially if we're looking at an implementation date of at least a little bit, you know, a couple months out or something, so people could start to wrap their heads around it, try to set aside a dollar a week or whatever, and try to get there. Who beeped?
Oh, yes, Bill.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you. The thing I think you need to keep in mind is, and I haven't seen the notice that was published, but that's going to probably define your options. If the notice included a tiering in or just a one increase, you can go up to that increase or anywhere down. You got to remember this is a proprietary fund. It has to stand on its own. If you get that fund, so we can't rely on general funds to supplant water and sewer fees. If you're going to do a phased-in system, then I think your resolution has to identify the phase-in and then when is the increases going to be, on what date, and when do they start. If you go too far in the future, my concern is the rate study current, or is it then out of date? And then do you have to look at doing another rate study and then do another advertise and more public hearings? In my mind, you're better off probably just setting an amount, and then if you're going to go sometime in the future, come back and revise it. So I see some advantages of proceeding in accordance with what the recommended rates are, or otherwise I think you're going to be looking at some procedural increments in the future, particularly if you delay those too long.
Okay, was the phase-in approach in the report, or that was just something you added tonight?
The alternatives are in the report, but the recommendation.
Oh, sorry about that, yeah. Justin, step up.
Sorry. The alternatives, there's a four or five different alternatives for phasing in the rate adjustment, but the recommendation, and right. I understand the resolution, is a one-step increase. Right.
Okay.
Did I answer your question?
Yes. Thank you. Okay.
And just for, I guess, depending on how we're moving forward on this, it's at pages 32 and 33 of 108, so of the overall study. On page 32, it's titled Table 27, and that one, nutshell simplification, is increasing the rate 5% every year, and it's showing for the next 5 years. It would take us 5 years to get to about break even, where we're exactly covering all of our depreciation, operating expenses, and replacement costs. On page 33, it has an 11.7% implementation over 3 years. So it shows you the average monthly user rate for each of those scenarios in tables 27 and 28.
Okay.
And thank just you. For the record, with the 11.7% increase over 3 years, it's not until the third year that we would hit solvency, if you will. Or that at least our net revenue would exceed our costs.
Okay.
I have a question, if I could. Sure. And I don't know if this can even be answered, but when we're looking at solvency, where are we at in the wastewater fund right now, Jared?
Yeah, Jared Empey, City Treasurer. So to answer your question, and it's a very important question that I think needs to be taken into consideration. So I took a look at the operating income since 2010, and particularly in the sewer fund. The sewer fund has not covered its costs since from 2010 to 2018. And on an operating basis, the sewer fund has lost between $1.4 million and essentially losing about $100,000. So over that period between 2010 and 2018, the sewer fund lost $5.7 million. In other words, it was $5.7 million behind where it should be funded. So one of the biggest reasons we brought up enacting a rate increase immediately was, even if you eventually get to where your operating results are becoming positive, that isn't necessarily filling the hole. So hopefully that was a direct enough answer.
$5.7 million worth.
That's $5.7 million. Good answer. Okay. Well, what we certainly don't want to do is get to a point where we have to do, and I'm not picking on Nampa, I think they did a good job of coming back from the hole they were in, but getting to the point of where they give their citizens an alternative. You either have to bond for this amount to get this done, or we're going to raise your sewer monthly rates up by, it was a substantial increase. I don't remember now what it was, $60 a month or something. And they opted for the bonding and got themselves out of that hole. But the problem was they dug a hole that was tough. It was $100 and some million. So we certainly don't want to get to that point. And I think we're doing the right thing fiscally. It's still just a tough pill to swallow. So we'll somehow get to that. But Bill, you had a comment?
Sorry, Bill Gigray, city attorney. As you consider this, I think, and if you want to ask questions of Mr. Bachman in regards to if you lower the amount of the rate, what that will do, the Revenue Bond Act is pretty clear that, you know, these monies are used for operation, maintenance, replacement, and depreciation of the works, which is the water fund and the sewer system. And my experience working with cities for longer than most people out there are probably alive is that when you reduce revenues for your proprietary systems, they have to operate on their own. And so the most protected is going to be expenses of operation and then maintenance. And then if the monies are short, the funds for replacement and for depreciation just aren't there. And so what happens is the disaster. I've got one situation where I'm working with a municipality who may have an irrigation system in total failure because they have just not collected the revenues necessary for depreciation and replacement. And it's an important part of the whole picture. So you have to operate. You do. I mean, you're going to shut the water off. You're going to shut the sewers off. And nobody wants to see that picture. And so that'll be, I would think, most guarded. And then maintenance, you can kind of let some maintenance go for a little bit, but so on. But I'd say if you're seriously looking at reductions based on all the work that's been done by Keller and Associates and the rate study, I would suggest that you would ask Bob to look at different scenarios, and he can come back and tell you when he's given a little time. If you do that, this is where these shortfalls are going to show up and where we're going to have problems.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I really like that idea. And it's only because, you know, you had said, Brianna, you talked about kind of the instantaneous impact with everything that's going on with property values, tax increases, things like that, the property taxes and stuff. If we could figure out at least a couple scenarios for Bob to look at that he could come back and tell us this is the impact I foresee if we do the 3-year, you know, scenario 4 approach, or if we do the 5-year, 5% approach, that would at least allow for me to justify a potential instantaneous increase or justify why we might look at a more common tiered approach that way. So if we can pick couple of them, or pick one of them, pick two of them. I like that idea.
I guess my initial thought would be, just given, as I think we have all kind of come to understand the kind of dire situation that we are about to be in or could find ourselves in, I think I would be fine with maybe hearing about a 2-year and maybe a 3-year. But I understand why going to like a 5-year or beyond would just be prolonging the inevitable. So I don't know how you feel about that, Bob. And then we would be able to say, you know, we're willing to accept these risks, knowing fully that it could mean we have to go out for a huge bond or whatever. And can maybe do more of a, yeah, does it make more sense to go ahead and say, average person's sewer bill is going to go up $9 a month versus, you know, it goes up 5 this year and 5 next year, and then what, you know, does that make sense?
Mayor and Council, yes, I'd be more than happy to put that information together and bring it back for another meeting.
Okay. I guess we kind of jumped right over water to sewer because sewer is the more the bigger increase and kind of the more concerning situation. But did we have any thoughts on our approach to water? Is there any questions we have for Bob or things that we would want looked at for the next meeting on that?
Not necessarily for me. I mean, when that one's very stable, I think not a lot we need to know about that one so much. I think it's just the and it basically it just comes down to that dollar amount per month on everybody's bill that's gonna hit. So,
Mayor, if you don't mind, I wanted to point out one thing that I forgot to bring up on the water, and that is. Even though we saw, I might have my numbers slightly off here, somewhere between a 9 and 10% increase in growth last year, we actually decreased our potable water usage by about 25,000 gallons. So I'm very proud of my staff and the citizens for how hard they worked to make that happen. That's not easy to do when you add that many rooftops and decrease the amount of water used. And I think that's important to note. Our staff's hard work, and it just shows that people do care and are working towards it. And I think we do feel like the tiered rate and the water is a step in the right direction. Might not be quite as far as some may like, but I do think it'll actually increase that number going on into next year. If it passes, I'm excited to see what it does going forward.
Well, I do like the fact that we do have a senior rate. Also, the people I'm most worried about are those that are on a fixed income and don't really have the ability to make any more in a payment.
So yes, absolutely.
Appreciate that.
You folks are the ones who have had the least amount of time to digest this. Like I said, Greg and I already saw the study. We had plenty of time with the consultants and everything to ask our questions and kind of get all the info. So, do you guys have any lingering questions or things that you brought back for next time? I hate to put you on the spot, but yeah.
That's your job.
Well,
the water-based tier system. I certainly appreciated what Lance had to say, but when we look at tiered usage and in the fairness of it, looking at this, it makes sense to me. I don't necessarily have additional questions to bring up next time. Okay. So.
How do you feel about it, Rich?
I've got some rough figures. Right now, we're paying $48.32 a month for sewer and water, $21.02 for water, $27.30 for sewer. If you were to take Tier 1, at 1767 allows up to 5,000 gallons, and take Tier 1 on the wastewater, you'd be at $35. The total would be 5267. You're paying 48.32. The difference on the average 50% of our citizens, the average increase would be $4.35 a month. For those that have been with the city, back in 2006, we had a major sewer break on 10 Mile, and there was no contingency left in the sewer fund. We had to borrow from the general fund to the sewer fund and from the water fund in order to make the repairs to avoid a bond issue. The employees of the city here went on a 37 or 36 week work week in order to help the citizens. I was amazed on the reciprocation we got from the citizens and the employees here who actually took a cut and pay of about 4 hours a week until we got the money paid back. I would just as soon see, and I am a senior citizen. I don't use the senior citizens' rates, but part of the problem we got now is the bond issue that the school just got passed. I know it added about $500 a month to my office and my home each. So 435 probably will get a little feedback from the community, but knowing the consequences of not having sufficient funds in our contingency, I just assume go to 435, take the hit from the community, and try to explain to them the necessity of the rate increase.
Okay.
What's your preference? So wait, am I understanding you correctly, Rich, that you feel comfortable with what's here tonight and you would be okay with passing it tonight if that's...
I would be. And okay. Usually I am kind of against rate increases. There is one little condition I would put on it, and that would be Bob doesn't come back next year and ask for a 10% rate increase in the sewers. So I'd just as soon give it all this year. Take a break for 2 or 3 years, Bob, and then come up with another 10 if you need it. So,
Mayor and Council, our goal is to get it to where it, as Jared said, where it's paying for itself and then be able to take incremental increases as needed and hopefully, can't say never, but hopefully never have to come back and
do a 38%, 39% jump.
Yeah, we don't like it either, but we do feel the importance of it.
I personally would not like to have us pass this tonight. I think this is a rate increase. I'd like to at least give it another meeting or two to absorb and soak in. I know we need to get going and get it done, but I think I would like to do as was requested, to look at a tiered-in approach. Whether it works or not, we don't know. But at least bring that information back. I'd really like some more time to soak it in before we...
Yeah, I do really like the idea of, you know, at least the public fully understanding then, you know, this is the decision we're making. Like, let's say it's a two-year versus one-year implementation, and here's, you know, what the consequences of that could be. Could it end up costing a bunch more because we have some failure of something that we need to replace, et cetera, that sort of thing I think is helpful.
That is no problem at all.
Awesome.
So could we just then request a 2 and a 3 year and just have it be at that, or do you want
yeah,
to see?
I think so. I mean, I guess it's totally up to us, but I just didn't want to put so many potentials
right.
out
yeah.
there that
I,
it like takes up a ton of time.
And
but
I was
yeah.
just thinking a 2 and a 3 year, just
yeah.
you know, 3 year max about 2 years, and then of course the one lump sum. But if that would work for you, Bob.
Sure. I'm good with that.
Yeah. Okay. Is next meeting good then? We'll be having the public hearing about the other open space.
I think that's fine. I would also like that we would keep the public hearing
open. Yeah, I'm fine with that.
For public testimony. So.
Okay, so we want to go ahead and do it January 21st then? It could be a
I
very
think
late
that's
night.
Fine. Does that work for you?
Yeah, that'll work. I did want to ask if there's any questions that need to be addressed or answered on the two hookup fee portions of this.
Okay.
We had the water hookup fee of a $250 increase, and the sewer EDU interceptor fee increase of $500. And maybe I should explain that so the audience knows what those fees are, because it is a little bit difficult. Basically, those fees are what covers growth. The developers, builders pay that fee, which helps cover the expansion of the system. So it's important to us and to make sure that those rates accurately reflect the infrastructure that is going in the ground, and they are absorbing as much of that cost as possible. That's what that fee represents.
Yeah, having growth pay for itself.
Bob, would you also, in your motion, let us know how much is in the contingency fund for the sewer?
Yes, we can do that.
Okay.
Good.
Then I move we continue the public hearing and consideration to approve the new water and sewer system fees and policies until the meeting on January 21st, 2020, at which time we will continue to receive public testimony.
Second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded to table this item until the January 21st meeting, at which time we will still continue to take public hearing or public testimony. Anything further? Can I cover that? Yeah. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Is there a problem, Bob?
I thought I heard the wrong date on the council meeting, but maybe I'm wrong.
January 21st, 2020?
Okay.
I said the 2020, that yeah, and so maybe that's...
I thought I heard January the 29th. 20. I apologize.
No problem.
And make sure you use your 2020, not 20... All right, item 7A, consideration to approve 1902 LLA lot line adjustment. Jace Hellman. Thanks, right. Justin.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right. Good evening, members of the council, Mr. Mayor. For the record, Jace Hellman, Kingdom Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street. The lot line adjustment before you this evening is for actually the lot that Freedom Fitness will be built on. Their current construction plans show it crossing two lots, which technically is allowed in a commercial district. However, to make it cleaner, they are looking to just do a lot line adjustment, create one larger lot for the site to be built on, while leaving one smaller lot that will remain undeveloped at this time. And I guess that's it. And if you got any questions, I'll stand for them.
Really, you're going to stand?
Well, I'll sit here.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for Jace? Looks to be a pretty simple request.
All right. Based on the facts in the staff report, the case file, and the non-discussion that we had, I move we approve case number 1801 LLA. With the conditions of approval as listed in paragraph H.
Wait, what? Did I read the wrong thing? I must have. I'll second it.
Thank you.
Motion is made and seconded to approve the 1902 LLA.
Oh, did I say one? It's listed incorrectly in the packet then. Hang on. Sorry.
I wasn't hearing things.
You thought you were.
Yeah.
Hang on, let me get to the right section. Yeah, there's a typo in the packet. Well, there's a couple typos in the memo, but so I modify my motion then to reflect 1902 LLA, not 1801 LLA. Check those memos.
Second stance.
Oh. All right, so we had the motion and the second to approve 1902 LLA. Is there any further discussion? Are we comfortable with that case number? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Item B, request for direction on possible change in alcohol license renewal timeline. Chris Engels.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. So there was discussion between the cities and the county and the state about making a change to alcohol license renewal timelines. Currently, the state, the county, and the cities all expire on April 30th. The request was consideration to do a staggered, and then there was, upon conversation with the county and the cities, The recommendation is that the state would continue to expire on May 30th. The county is agreeable to expiring on May 30th, and then the cities would expire on June 30th or thereabouts. It wouldn't be mandatory, it would be optional. However, it would certainly benefit a rolling renewal for the users. The other portion that would change is currently there's a decrease in fees once you get to half the year and then three quarters of the year. So those dates would actually move in accordance. And then in the first year for the renewal, we would see them expire on May 30th of 2020, April 30th of 2020, and then they would not need to renew until the June 30th of 21. So they'd have about 14 months there. I stand for any questions and welcome any input from the chief. However, he is aware of the request and change. And so if council's direction is that we can move forward with this, we would come back with an ordinance for your consideration.
So this is actually a brainchild of our wonderful city clerk. A couple of other cities have already implemented it. It takes out that risk of having to close the Albertsons liquor aisles and Walgreens. And I think it kind of gets it down to the point where if somebody doesn't get anything in time now, it's kind of really not much we can do for them. So I appreciate all the time and effort. This has just been an ongoing issue for a long time, and I think because of her consideration on this, it's going to save a lot of people and a lot of cities a lot of problems. So thank you for doing that. You deserve some kudos for that. So.
Sounds good. Let's write it up.
We'll come back with an ordinance. Thanks.
All right, item C, information only, ethical considerations related to Greg McPherson's dual role as commissioner for the CUNA Fire District and member of the CUNA City Council, Bill Giggray.
Such a troublemaker.
I know. I already got yelled at last month for this. Show up to the meeting, see what's going on, and get yelled at.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, this is, as stated on the agenda, is informational only. We've already gone through this one time, as Councilman McPherson acknowledged at the commission of the or the meeting of the commissioners of the fire district. Point here is Councilman McPherson is now will be a commissioner of the fire district as well as a council member. I can tell you that I represent three fire districts that have exact same circumstances. There's no prohibition in Idaho law for him to serve in those two positions. The only thing that I thought would be helpful is just to provide, which I believe you have in your packet, my memo with regards to the ethical considerations as they might arise, which I think would not be very often. And the ones that come to mind clearly are the ethics of in Government Act, and that would be when a elected political official or any political official has or agency official has a pecuniary benefit based on a recommendation they would make or a vote that they would make, but that has to be a private pecuniary benefit either to themselves or a person or a member in their household or their business. So if there were a consideration before this council that might be a pecuniary benefit to the district, the fire district, but not to Councilman McPherson himself, that's not a conflict under the Ethics and Government Act. It has to be one that would be his personally. The way the law works, that if Councilman McPherson believes that there may be a conflict, he is responsible to disclose it, and then he can ask for a legal opinion with regards to whether there is or there is not a conflict of interest. He has the ability to ask his own attorney. He can ask the city attorney whether there is. He's not required to ask for that, but the safe play is to disclose it, ask for an opinion. If there's an opinion that it's not a conflict, it's really kind of a safe harbor to proceed, at least under the Ethics and Government Act, to act. The Ethics and Government Act does not prohibit him from voting. It does have civil penalties if there is a violation that were ultimately found by a court of law. In this particular instance, I see, quite frankly, the potential for issues would be if there are land use considerations here where we have conditional use permits, planned unit development, zone change, annexation, whatever, and we have some big developments and we will continue to have them, where the fire district chief or the commissioners of the fire district requested a condition of granting a conditional use permit or a PUD or a subdivision, and the developer doesn't want to do it. Then I would hope that our planning staff could flag that for Councilman McPherson, because that would mean that there would be potentially a conflict from what the applicant would want to do as opposed to what one of the agencies, which Councilman McPherson sits as a commissioner on, would request be included in the conditions of approval. If Councilman McPherson is able to disclose at the beginning, because some we can have disclosures as we've gone through before when we feel there may be issues or need to disclose, he could at that point make a decision as to whether or not he would put undue influence and weight on the request of the fire district for conditions over and above just listening to the evidence presented at the hearing itself. If he disclosed that he would be able to weigh them equally based on the information supplied, then that would clear the air that there isn't bias in making a decision, and I would recommend strongly we go through that process if that ever develops. And if the planning and zoning department, as they do great job staffing for you, would just flag those for Councilman McPherson ahead of time, then he knows when he gets the packet, well, we may have an issue here, and then he can think about what he wants to do at that point. That's where I think it will most likely raise its head. Hopefully not, but that would be a bias issue in a due process hearing on a land use matter. Other items that I've referenced in here are the Bribery and Corrupt Practices Act. I don't see that as being any different. That's just you don't take more than $50 from somebody that might want to take you to lunch or whatever. That's the Brent Coles rule that we want to stay away from. Other than that, I would suggest the other time on the Ethics and Government Act where it can come up, but this doesn't affect his capacity as a commissioner of the fire district or being a council member. It affects all of you. You just can't recommend and vote for the appointment of someone that's in your household or a relative or whatever, but that's a pervasive rule of the Ethics and Government Act on all elected officials. And that's in the memo. So I'll stand for questions. I don't mean to protract this. I just thought, let's just clear the air at the beginning. It's something new. Sometimes people don't understand how these acts work together. Well, how can somebody serve in this position and be in another? Well, it's perfectly legal, and the only time that we'd have an issue here would be in the Ethics and Government Act, and I think bias in quasi-judicial proceedings. And I'd stand for questions if you have any.
Okay. I didn't really have, I think there was only one issue that came up when I was playing a dual role. I left the fire commission when I became mayor because I thought it might be more more of a problem at that time. So, but as a council member and as a fire commissioner at the same time, I think there was one time that I just stated what my conflict could be and didn't seem to be an issue. So
it's carried forward.
But so it's
rare. It's the safest play.
Yeah. So it's rare, but I don't think you'll have any trouble with it.
And
no, he'll keep me out of trouble. That's right. Yeah. Here or there or both.
That's right. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Ordinances. A, consideration to approve ordinance number 2019-46. This is a municipal annexation and zoning ordinance of the City Council of the City of Cuna, making certain findings and declaration of authority and annexing certain real properties to wit Ada County Assessor's Parcel Numbers S21021100 and S21021240, owned by the Bureau of Land Management within the unincorporated area of Ada County, Cuna, and contiguous to the corporate limits of the City of Cuna, into the City of Cuna, Idaho, and respectfully establishing public P zoning district classifications of said real properties, and amending the official zoning map and directing the city engineer and city clerk and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance number 2019-46.
Second.
Motion is made to waive the three readings of ordinance number 2019-46. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2019-46.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance 2019-46. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vondervar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2019-47, the municipal rezone ordinance of the City Council of the City of Cuna, making certain findings and rezoning certain real properties to wit Ada County parcel numbers R24043300020, R24043300040, and R24043300060, owned by Leslie Properties, situated within the corporate limits of the City of Cuna, Ada County, Idaho, and amending the zoning map and directing the city engineer and city clerk and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance number 2019-47.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2019-47. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2019-47.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance 2019-47. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vondervar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2019-50, a municipal rezone ordinance of the City Council of the City of Cuna, making certain findings and rezoning certain real properties to wit lands legally described in Exhibit A, owned by HDP Greyhawk LLC, situated within the corporate limits of the City of Cuna, Ada County, Idaho, and amending the zoning map and directing the city engineer and city clerk and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance 2019-50.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance number 2019-50. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2019-50.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2019-50. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vondervar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2020-01, an ordinance of the City Council of Cuna, Idaho, repealing Chapter 2 of Title 11 Cuna City Code and enacting a new Chapter 2 of Title 11 Cuna City Code and directing the city clerk and providing an effective date.
Do we want to just go ahead and do this one, or?
I don't think there was anything in it that looked any cause for concern to me.
This is a random question, but am I just misremembering, or is this the first time we're seeing this? It is, right? Yeah. So normally we have like a marked up version. Was the prior chapter 2 also about parking?
Chief, is this ours?
This isn't ours, is it? Oh, this is the one that Mark wrote.
So this is in response to, we've had some parking situations that are occurring in the subdivisions outside of the high school. And so we had no authorities to do citations for being parked in front of mailboxes, driveways that were causing a lot of heartache for the neighborhood, for the homeowners there. And so due to the fact that we didn't have that and there wasn't an overriding state code that indicated that we could cite or that police could cite on their behalf, we needed to put something in place that would allow for that. And so Mr. Bybee with White, he wrote this in order for us to implement that.
Right, so this came from a request. We had a situation where people were parking in a subdivision, walking to school because they didn't want to pay the parking permit fees and
lining
parking
the streets
in front of mailboxes, and there was no recourse to make them move, couldn't tow them, couldn't, people just couldn't get their mail, and it was a problem. So
correct.
We worked with the chief on getting that, and then, yeah, that's where that came from.
Okay. Is there a reason that we would like to have additional readings? What are folks' thoughts? As a side note, can I just say, I still have a strong preference against including, for example, on page 6 of 8 for 11.2.9, there's a section A and then a subsection 1, but there is no B and there is no 2. And it doesn't make sense to me that we would have subsections like that if there's not additional parts. Like, I don't know why this wouldn't just be section 11.2.9 with no A and 1, because there's, does that make sense? Like, why would there ever be a 1 if there's not a 2? There's not a reason to put something as number 1 if there is no number 2. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
That's just a personal issue. If people disagree with it, that's fine.
I think the hope preference was to waive the three readings so that we could, so that the police would have the ability to begin action if they needed, since school's just started again.
Okay.
So I think we can make the motion including that change if you would like.
So for 11.2.10, then B1, let's just put 1 into B since there's no 2. I think those were the only ones. Let me make sure. Yeah. Okay. It's a weird quirk, but it is like one of those things that drives me nuts. Okay. Move we waive three readings of ordinance number 2020-01 as amended.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2020-01. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried.
I move we approve ordinance 2020-01 as amended.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance number 2020-01 as amended. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
So in terms of summary publication, because we are repealing an entire chapter and enacting an entirely new chapter, are we still just trying to summarize the changes that were made, or because we changed everything, even if it was just moving stuff to different parts, how would that work?
We can summarize or we can publish. It's typically we offer the option to summarize, which we would summarize with the repeal of Chapter 2, the title, and then the bullets underneath it. So if we need, we can publish the whole thing as well.
What do you guys think?
So we could do a summary publication, I think, as long as we do, like you said there, and then put the summary in as what the material change was. That would be my thought. Bill?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, I'm glad that question was brought up as I'm looking at this. As I always work with Chris, and she supplies me with these, and I'm always uncomfortable with what she supplied. This is Mark's first shot at this, and I believe that the published summary that we would publish will embellish a little more about what the replaced and new chapter of Title 11 is. Okay. We can list the specifics that is in there and still do it as a notice of published summary without having to publish the whole ordinance, but we would identify more of the particulars than what he's done here.
Okay.
So, okay. And I'm comfortable with doing that if you're okay, and I can work with Chris and we can get that put together very quickly. But it's a very good question. Thank you for asking it.
All right. I move we approve summary publication of ordinance number 2020-01.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve a summary publication of ordinance number 2020-01. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Consideration to approve ordinance 2020-02. An ordinance of the City Council of CUNA, Idaho, amending Section 8 of Chapter 6 of Title 1, CUNA City Code, providing a 5-minute applicant rebuttal testimony time limit. And directing the city clerk and providing an effective date.
I move. So just for curiosity, it's the only change, right, is that we're taking the rebuttal testimony from 10 minutes to 5.
Correct.
Was there something that prompted that? Are we just coming in line with other cities? Or?
Well, the last public hearing that we had that had to do with the green space, it made me realize that the developers don't really like the timelines that are given, and when it was switched on them, it was obvious that they didn't like that, doing that in a backwards motion. So. One thing that I had heard from the public before was that they didn't like the fact that after they got up and they did the testimony, then the applicant gets back up and presents a lot more information than what they did in the actual original presentation. And so that 10-minute time limit looked to be deceitful to them, because then they don't get to rebut. So my hope is that by reducing this to a 5-minute timeline, it will force the original 15-minute kind presentation to be more inclusive of all information and less apt to cause friction from the public.
And the original is 10, is that right? Yeah. No, staff is 15, applicant 10. Perfect. Okay. Okay, that makes sense to me. Did anybody else have any thoughts, concerns, comments?
Nope.
Okay. I move we waive three readings of ordinance number 2020-02.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive three readings of ordinance 2020-02. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2020-02.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve ordinance 2020-02. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. And summary publication?
Oh, sorry about it. I was already looking at the next one. Move we approve summary publication of ordinance 2020-02.
Second.
Motion made and seconded to approve a summary publication of ordinance 2020-02. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried. Last one. Consideration to approve ordinance number 2020-03, an ordinance of the City Council of Cuna, Idaho, addition of a new Chapter 5 to Title II Cuna City Code establishing the Cuna Economic Development Executive Committee. And directing the city clerk and providing an effective date.
I move we waive three readings of ordinance number 2020-03.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to waive the three readings of ordinance 2020-03. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
I move we approve ordinance 2020-03.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve ordinance 2020-03. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Council President Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember McPherson?
Yes.
I move we approve summary publication of ordinance number 2020-03.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve a summary publication of 2020-03. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. That is all we have for the evening. And if I had any announcements, I don't remember what they are. Oh, Bobby and his crew, they moved a tree. We had three that were growing right tight close to each other. And so the three were going to end up killing each other because you just can't have them growing that close. So they got a tree spade, went down and took the one out of the center, and they brought it and planted it right behind City Hall. So you'll notice there's a nice little tree there. It's not because Bobby has a really awesome green thumb and can make trees grow fast. but I think he estimated the cost, the value of that tree to be about $3,500, something like that. So by spending about $800 to move it out here, we saved approximately $10,000 worth of trees and have a nice one out back. So kudos to the park department for making that happen.
Well done.
Yeah. Good. 1 minute there was no tree, all of a sudden there is. It was good.
That was a tremendous cost.
It was tremendous. Yeah.
It's a good pun. That was a good pun.
We just got to keep the Velcros out of it. They stick around, those Velcros.
Oof.
I don't know. That's all I got.
Mayor,
Richard, yeah.
If I could get the chief to walk Main Street between C and D Street on the north side sometime this week, look at the sidewalk.
Is this a serious request? Or are you going to trick him?
No, there's... We've got back to the problem of vomit on the sidewalks.
I had to ask, didn't I?
Yeah. Thought I'd bring it up before you ate your cookies.
You did get rid of that mail slot in your door.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I want to thank the city for the decorations of the park and downtown. It was very nice. Very nice.
And we had some nice displays that people put out back here, too. good to look at. So it was good.
The only drawback I got on up there was there was a couple of gentlemen that were just pulling the lights down, not disengaging them, just pulling them down off the trees. So they must have been part-timers.
We'll do better.
All right. Anybody else have anything? Meeting adjourned. Thank you.